All right, now it's time to dive into Debian.
Oof. Other than install it and use it? Yeah.
I don't think we need to do anything other than that, because I have been, and...
I have, too. I actually got a new-to-me laptop, so I got a whole bunch of changes going on.
Wow!
I got this Asus VivoBook, like 14-inch jobby with the touch screen.
Uh-oh. So you're going to compile the touchscreen drivers on Gentoo then?
Nope. I got Debian on this, and it's working great. Debian 12. I got the DistroBox. This has the thing.
Is that a llama?
No, that's a
Datsun. Oh, that's a Datsun.
Yeah. This is my wife's hand-me-down. So I get the dog, too, I guess.
Okay. Hot dog. I'm a wiener.
Coming up in this episode, the catch-up episode. We've missed so much. The Red Hat recap. Browser watching. Some feedback and a focus. Hello and welcome to the Linux User Space Season 4, Episode 1.
I don't know how we got here. I really don't. Four seasons. Four.
I know.
But we are the four seasons.
Well, he's Leo, and I'm Dan, so that's who we are.
Look, it's season four. If you don't know that by now.
We've been on a couple times.
That's true, I guess. Well, if you've never heard us before or seen us before, I'm Leo and he's Dan. Yeah. I don't know how I think that there aren't new people watching the show. The numbers.
Well, I hope there are. They keep going up. So, I mean, there's that.
Yeah. I guess. I don't know what you see in us, but I see you.
Anyway, if you haven't joined before and this is your first episode, well, welcome. And if you did join last season, you knew one of the things that we were going to do all season long was try to run Gentoo and kind of check in on it from time to time. So we thought we'd start right off, right here, first thing in the first episode of the new season, and kind of do a check-in, see how Gentoo was going. And I'm just going to give you a brief synopsis of where I'm at.
Well, hold on. Dan, have you ever used Gentoo before?
Never.
I've never used it either. The closest to Gentoo I've ever been, and this might be blasphemy, is Arch. And I know it's not the same, but you gotta build it and put it together and, you know, right? Well,
I mean, if you look back at the episodes that we did, we've done some hard things. We've done Slackware. We've done Avoid.
Alpine was challenging.
Yeah, it was.
Nix was challenging.
We did Arch, the Arch way.
That was challenging.
Void
too.
Was a little tricky. I don't know. We've done some hard stuff. Like, it's not like we've done all easy mode, just, you know, Calamari's install and next. We've done some hard ones too. And this one is obviously ranking right up there for one of the hardest. Certainly would not without challenge for me. And yeah, which isn't like, it's not the hardest thing because, you know, they do give you a good handbook to work from. And they talk about a couple of different ways for everything that you want to do. You just need to read through all of that at least once and then map out which direction you want to go with it.
My problem is you have to read. You have to pay attention. You can't just slap it on in and just hope for the best. That is not how this works at all.
Yeah. You're not just sticking the live USB in there and go. It's a little harder than that. So you kind of map out which direction you want to go, what sort of thing makes your system. Much like Arch and maybe even Void, like you sort of set your own destiny in those distros where you pick the things you want to, you know, comprise your distro.
like the init system, because we think about init systems all the time.
Yeah. And so
it's my favorite thing to think about.
Yeah, some people do though, but I mean, like, so the handbook doesn't go over them all explicitly, although you could diverge from what the handbook says if you were feeling comfortable. The handbook does go over System D, if that was something you want, although that's not the preferred method. OpenRC is, so.
Wait, hold on. You're telling me that not everybody loves System D? I'm under the impression that it's the like the best thing since Wayland. And everybody loves Wayland.
Yeah. It's good. Like I'm comfortable with it. I like it. You can. Like, you could follow the instructions. They're there. Although it's not the first method, if you will. So if you're not feeling super comfortable, just follow the preferred instructions, at least for the first time, I feel like. Anyway.
I hear you. What I'm hearing is I don't have my finger on the pulse of where everybody in Linux is at. I thought it was System D and Wayland all day and Pipewire. I mean, throw Pipewire in there too. Why not? Because not even, not everybody's on board with Pulse even. So.
Yeah. Finger on the pulse. Yeah, I get it.
Okay. That was a good one.
So I've obviously done some of these harder distros, done some other init systems, done some things that are a little more challenging. And I will say Gentoo has tried my patience a couple times. Even me.
Wow.
But I've bumped into some bugs, and I'll talk about those probably later in the season. Anyway, to make the long story shorter right now, I did manage to get a desktop long enough to get some screenshots, and I posted them up into Telegram and stuff. I actually had Telegram and stuff installed on here, too. So
wow. Like, well, hold on. Wait. Like, Flatpak Telegram,
nope.
Right?
Nope.
Wow. Like, emerged Telegram?
I emerged Telegram.
Wow.
So, but I ran into some issues. Some of it is recent, because I like I said, I got it up and running. I got the desktop environment going. I was able to log in, get to the desktop, and then came the problems because it was time to do an update.
Then came the problem. I like how you didn't have problems until you had like a full desktop with everything going, and like it's just oh yeah, this thing just won't compile for me.
Yeah, so now that's where I'm at. Like, I don't know which thing triggered that, so I had to do some rebuilds on some of the Qt stuff that I had, and I did that, and then I got it a little further, and then I started to want to do Rust, the language Rust, and it started there, and it got to I'm going to say a late stage in compiling that, and it just sat there for. I let it sit a long time because I was like, well, is it compiling? It kind of looks like it's doing something, but I can't really tell.
Right.
And the screen didn't move for 2 days.
You forgot to emerge BTOP in TTY2 over here so you could watch what was going on.
it has TOP. So, I mean, I could have, but it looked like it was still processing something, but it wasn't moving at all. So I ended up canceling out of that. And then here's where I cheated. I
how dare you?
I start reading in the wiki, and it's like, hey, if you don't really need all of those special compile flags for Rust, just use the bin. So I switched it to the binary, and
okay,
now I'm cooking again, and hopefully I can finish my update, because my half updated system didn't really work well. So I'm back to. Back to going again, but I didn't have a functional desktop environment there for a little while.
All right. You're definitely further than me. Here's my Gentoo check-in. It ain't booting yet.
Nope.
Look, I started in a VM. Mm-hmm. I got the live system booted. I got the disks partitioned. I think I'm ready to install.
Okay.
I have not. I've like my intention here, I would suppose. Episode 11
okay.
is when I'm saying the things Dan's saying, where I'm like, oh yeah, I got Plasma. That thing was compiling all last week, and I'm ready to go. And
it
then
did take 2 days by for the that, time, the first time.
By the time it's done compiling, they've issued updates, so you got to start over. And
kind of how it went, yeah.
I'm not there yet. I want to be there. I will be there. Not there yet.
Well, all right. Here's the part where I admit it's kind of my second time through because I did do a VM. I didn't take it all the way to the desktop environment, but I did a VM to kind of get a feel of how things go and whatnot. And so I got that through to at least it'll boot. And, you know, you get Grub installed and, you know, it boots and you can get, you know, a NeoFetch screen and that sort of stuff. So I got that far. And then I decided, all right, I got this now. I'm going to move over to the laptop that I've got set aside. A Tater Top. That's what I'm using to test Gen 2 for the entire season. It's an i3 third gen processor, so not a lot of horsepower there. It's only got 4 gig of RAM, so it's also not a powerhouse as far as the amount of RAM it has. So it does take a while to compile things, but if there's ever a laptop that needs the optimization that you can gain from compiling your own stuff, this one's it.
It's Tater Top. Yep. Okay. Well, I'm in the same boat. I have an i5 fifth gen, 2 cores. So
that's not too bad.
It'll be better off than Tater Top, but not by a whole lot.
Yep.
So we'll see how that goes once I start getting stuff compiled, but, not there yet.
Yeah, as we go, I will tell you about some of the bugs that I actually encountered because of the processor that I have.
Ah, okay. All right. Very cool.
Hey, the other big thing, other big news. We've got some huge news that we want to announce. We have a Lemmy instance.
Yay!
So that's
we have everything, right? Like we've been out on the internet for a while and we have like an everything. We have a Lemmy. Yeah.
So that's the other thing that's kept me busy. Sysadmining the Lemmy instance up. It wasn't too bad really, honestly. Because the Lemmy folks, they got a great little Ansible playbook that you can run. You go in, you set all your variables for, you know, your host name and, you know, all that jazz. You set all that and then you run the playbook and it'll deploy it on your VPS or, you know, home server, whatever you got. And so I did that and that worked pretty slick. And I've even updated it twice since I installed. So both of those have gone pretty well too. So that's what we got. So if you don't know what Lemmy is like a alternative to Reddit, basically an aggregator of feeds that you can get. And obviously this episode right here will end up in the episode channel.
So if you think back a little while ago, I don't know if you've used Reddit, you might have heard about all of the Reddit API changes that were happening while we were on break. See, all kinds of stuff happened while we were on break. I think this whole entire show is going to be just a recap of all the junk that happened while we were on break.
Well, we said but, that.
yeah, right? So Reddit did this thing a lot like Twitter. So Twitter, maybe a year ago or whatever, killed their API, their public API, so you can't just go scraping it. And like things like Cawbird now don't work. Mm-hmm. So you have to use the official Twitter website or the official Twitter app to be able to access it. Well, Reddit decided to do the exact same thing, which meant that Bacon Reader and Apollo and all of the phone apps that people grew to love and use no longer work after June 30th. I think July 1st was the first day with no public API access.
But even worse than that, though, what that also took away were some of the moderator tools. Yeah, they kept the place clean though. They kept the community nice and clean.
It's like the Twitter thing, but worse because it made it. Yes, with the Reddit app, you have to consume the ads and all that stuff, and I mean that's arguable whether or not that's good or bad, right? But this really kind of hamstrung the community because the community polices the community in Reddit, so it's a much different dynamic and caused a bit of havoc. And so there was like subreddit blackouts where you just couldn't get content. And that meant that like Google search results that brought up Reddit as the answer to your query, some of those just didn't work for a while. They do now. But anyway, Lemmy has been around for a little while, but Lemmy, as Mastodon did when Twitter had a lot of their kerfuffles.
At least the first time.
Yeah. Lemmy has gotten a whole lot of traffic because of it. So we decided, why not? Let's go do Lemmy 2. But the cool thing about Lemmy is that we can self-host it, and ours lives at lemmy.linuxuserspace.show. So if you already have a Lemmy account, we have three communities, one for news, that's basically just a constant deluge of news, Linux adjacent news directly to your face. You can also get this in Discord. You can also get this at Reddit. But I don't know, man. Lemmy has a different feel, and I like it.
Yeah.
We have the episodes feed, which is separate. And so if you just want to know about new episodes, you can sub to that community. And then we have the forum, which is, instead of making a forum that we'd have to self-host anyway, why not just do that in Lemmy, where lots of like-minded folks are ending up anyway?
We hope you can stick some feedback in that open forum, and maybe we can have a little conversation, maybe bring some of those topics back here to the show.
Lemmy, go get all of your cool stuff in Lemmy.
Yeah, absolutely. We look forward to seeing you there, look forward to seeing some of the topics that you bring, and hopefully you can follow along on the episodes.
And it's federated. It's so apparently, like, I don't know how this works, but
yeah, you can totally follow on other things. Like, so if you wanted to follow on Mastodon, that works pretty good, I think. Some of the other ActivityPub things don't work as well, from what I know, but some of them work pretty good. So Mastodon is one that if you wanted to follow along and not necessarily join Lemmy, you could.
But that is really cool, though. I like this whole federated thing. That you don't always have to have an account on the thing that you want to use, as long as you have some account somewhere on the Fediverse that that you can interact with.
Right.
And that's just fantastic, man. People say all the time, especially nerds, but it's like, it's internet the way it used to be. And with a whole lot of extra bells and whistles to it, man.
It kind of is. So it's like we got our own BBS and you can dial in and check out our stuff.
Yes. Yes, as long as you've got some kind of account somewhere on the Fediverse, you can consume all that news content. Yeah, because we don't actually post, like, the Lemmy news on Mastodon. Like, I feel like that would clutter up do try to say on Mastodon.
Right. No, I agree. It'd be a lot.
It would
be too much.
Yeah, exactly. So, man, it's just a really cool... like it. Yep. I like all the stuff. It's super cool. So come join us on Fediverse something. We got all the Fediverse's things.
Absolutely. So. Hey, and the other thing is, if you enjoy watching our face, you can do that too. Right over on YouTube, if you haven't watched us there. So that's, you know, youtube.com/LinuxUserspace.
Do the Fediverse thing.
Well, we got one of those too. So, like, you know, Tilvids, that's the place on the Fediverse where you can see us.
Educational things.
Edutainment, they call it. Edutainment.
Good call.
Edutainment. And so we really appreciate Tilvid's support, you know, hosting our videos, because it takes server, you know, space to do all that and some bandwidth to stream it out to you. So Tilvid's is gracious enough to host us there. And certainly the history episode stuff that we do, we try to get that over there. And, you know, if you like it all, you just like us, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/LinuxUserspace.
Turns out, hosting a Lemmy, doing the video stuff, posting here, posting there, playing with Gen 2 takes time, takes effort, takes a lot of attention. So, yeah, if you like this content, Patreon. And if for some reason, I'm curious, just for my own morbid curiosity, if you don't like Patreon, but you'd like to contribute to the show and you have some other idea that you could, some other way that you could contribute, let us know. That's what that old contact button's for.
Big, big, big first topic here. Holy cow.
Well, so I said a little while ago that there was a lot of stuff that happened while we were on break. And, well... before we get into that, there's a whole Red Hat thing that happened over the break. that I'd like to talk about, that I know Dan has some opinions about, that I know I have some opinions about.
Yep. I do.
But what I really want to do is kind of talk about the history, where it came from, how we're here in the first place, and then we can take it from there.
I think that's a good approach. I think, you know, get the facts out there, and then, you know, then we can give our side of things.
So way back in 2019, back in July, IBM completed its acquisition of Red Hat for $34 billion. And Jim Whitehurst said at the time, "Joining forces with IBM gives Red Hat the opportunity to bring more open source innovation to an even broader range of organizations and will enable us to scale to meet the need for hybrid cloud solutions that deliver true choice and agility." Then in late 2020, December, CentOS Stream was announced as the successor to CentOS Linux, and CentOS Linux 8 was to be unsupported within about a year. And you can hear the history of CentOS and leading up to it back in season 3.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chris Wright, the CTO of Red Hat, said, "CentOS Linux has truly helped to make RHEL and the supporting communities better. And with CentOS Stream, we intend to continue this drive to make Linux innovation faster and more collaborative." In an FAQ linked in the CentOS announcement about Stream by Rich Bowen, it's noted that the source code for Red Hat Enterprise Linux will continue to be published on git.centos.org. Nothing will change about how the source code is published. This change is only related to the binaries the CentOS project is building and how they are published. In 2021, January, Red Hat announces more free RHEL. Took a little while, but you can get up to 16 systems running RHEL. And in February, Brian Exelbeard noted on the Red Hat developer site that in reference to CentOS sources on the CentOS GitHub, "We are not making any changes to this process." In March, Alma Linux 8.3 was released, and in June, Rocky Linux followed with 8.4. And 2022 was pretty quiet. Alma was doing their thing, Rocky was doing their thing, and CentOS Stream was in full swing. And it seemed like things were back to normal. Red Hat was posting 15% revenue increases every quarter of the year. And IBM, despite its projected 3,900-person layoff, was growing at similar rates. But in 2023, there was a Red Hat announcement on April 24th, and it was a shock to everyone, including Red Hat and Fedora employees. Ben Cotton let us know that he was one of the many who were laid off, along with 4% of the workforce. It was about 800 employees. In late June, Red Hat announced that CentOS sources, and this is the bombshell, will no longer be on GitHub. And Brian Uxelbeard's post from February 2021 changed from "we are not making any changes" to "sources remain publicly available, but as of June 2023, the publication process has changed." 5 days later, McGrath writes a clarification post on what that means to CentOS and everybody else moving forward. And 3 days later, Rocky Linux announces that they'll be using the universal base images available through AWS and other cloud providers to access source RPMs to continue their cloning. And on July 13th, just a few days before we recorded this, Alma announces that because of these changes, they will no longer aim to be bug-for-bug compatible with RHEL. So a lot has happened. The bombshell, which was sources will no longer be on GitHub, which is what spurred Rocky Linux on to saying that they're going to just, you know, grab the SRPMs from the universal base images, and that led Alma to say we just can't be bug for bug compatible. That change just meant that they're not chucking the sources out publicly anymore.
Right.
Red Hat.
Right, right.
And that means that you can't just make a clone the same way that...
At least not the same way. Nope. Yep.
Right. And I think the general recommendation was, well, if you want to make a clone, you go to the CentOS Stream GitHub and you can pull that and you'll just have to kind of figure it out.
Eventually, it all ends up in CentOS and, you know, obviously ends up in RHEL. It's just, it's more about timing. And
right.
And that's kind of important if you want to be exact clones.
So it's hard to differentiate what's what.
Right.
So Rocky decided that they were going to say, all right, well, there are Red Hats out there that you don't need a subscription for. Because the whole thing is that the sources are still there. You can get it through the Red Hat subscriber agreement.
Right.
Like, you can get access to the sources, but the agreement says if you distribute those, we're gonna get rid of you.
Yeah, we'll cut off your subscription. Yeah.
So you can't do it that way anymore. So Rocky's kind of found an end run around by grabbing these universal base images and pulling what they need from that. So they claim that they're still gonna have a bug for bug, 1-to-1 copy of RHEL. And one thing that was not in the bit of history, because it hasn't really fleshed out yet, is SUSE. Or SUSE?
Yeah, yeah. Think, so, anyway. Yeah, there's a couple of Me Too posts that we haven't really talked about, right? Mm-hmm. So SUSE is one of them. And so they put in their oar into the water. And they had this other thing that they had going and they kind of gave up on. And now they've started, I guess, again. And that's called Liberty Linux. Which was kind of a clone before, or they were going to make a RHEL clone before and then gave up. And now they say they're going to come up with a way to do that themselves. Although I don't know that they've specified necessarily the way they're going to do it. Although there was some talk that they were going to work with the Rocky folks and come up with a mechanism to share some of that.
So SUSE is now in Rocky Linux's corner, and they bring along with them $10 million
right.
to make sure that this cloning project continues the way that it always has. And that was the promise that Rocky made to all of its customers.
Mm-hmm. And so here's the other interesting thing with SUSE is, so they have a reason for this. They have this management thing that they're trying to market, the SUSE Linux manager, or whatever I forget the term exactly, but it is supposed to be somewhat of a bridge, if you will, to help you manage all of your enterprise Linux things, including SUSE, mm-hmm. and in addition to Red Hat stuff. So it they've had that for a while, but now this is the reasoning why they want to push this forward. It's because it helps benefit their bottom line with being able to market the SUSE manager.
Uh-huh. So everybody making business moves is really what this kind of boils down to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Alma's not going to be bug for bug, which means that they're presumably going to go their own way, but it would be kind of cool. I don't know that they would, but it would be kind of cool if they ended up in the same pot as Rocky and SUSE and SUSE. And, well, I hesitate to say Oracle.
Well, they're in the mix, too. They've also issued their Me Too post. And they're going to, they said, if, you know, Red Hat, you know, if you're not going to have CentOS, like, come on over to Oracle. Like, we'll take you.
Right.
And if Red Hat, if you don't want to pay your developers, that's okay. We'll take them too. So they're going to throw in the 500-pound gorilla and just kind of smash at it.
And I think what's really funny about this is that if you're new to the community, if you're new to Linux, if you're new to the enterprise Linux stuff, you wouldn't really know where Oracle's been mm-hmm. and who they are and what they've done.
The history is important.
So if you're coming in without that context, man, Oracle's looking really good. Right now, they're saying the right thing.
Yeah, their statement was off the charts good.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, just how much can you trust it?
Yeah, right, exactly. So, but they did say the right stuff. I mean, yes. it sounds like Oracle definitely has a good PR team, whereas
their timing was good.
Red Hat does not.
Nope.
I don't know of a single controversial move that Red Hat has made that hasn't just been insanely tone deaf.
Yeah.
In its delivery. Yeah. I guess it just costs less to just make the moves and piss people off than paying a PR person to write this for them.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just can't think of a single controversial one. The one stuff that would make the community mad. Nothing that I can remember has come off particularly good. And it's not like this is new.
No.
This happened back in Red Hat Linux before they attached the enterprise part.
Exactly. That's how Fedora Core happened, essentially.
Right.
They figured they're like, we don't want to deal with that, so we're just gonna throw that over here. And then you know, so that's how that began. And then that's when Red Hat Enterprise Linux started.
I get it. I mean, you have to make money moves. Mm-hmm. I understand. But man, it'd be really cool if you didn't just say stuff and not see the way that it was going to be taken.
So here's where I like Alma Linux too, because, so Red Hat drops the bomb and it's like everybody, I don't blame any of the clones for being clones because, hey, it's there. It's available. Smart move. Take what you got, right? Take what's available to you. Now it's not. And so Alma says, all right, well, we're going to roll up the sleeves and we're going to get to work. We're going to do the thing. We're going to do the thing
right,
the way we got to do it. And rather than try to find a way around and then run around and get those sources, you know, yet another way. What happens when that dries up? I mean, you don't have a plan B really very well, I don't think.
Yeah.
So and Alma's doing the work. They're like,
no, you do have a plan B. It's to risk your subscriber agreement.
Maybe.
That's plan B, I think.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
What are they going to do? Take away my free 16 subscription thing to Free Realm?
Yeah, well, that's where you get your nom de plume and you sign yourself up as someone else and away you go, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Like, you're going to run out of that. That's only going to work so long, and it doesn't seem like a viable solution to me.
Right. Well, not for a distribution that claims enterprise
exactly.
support. I mean, this is the corner that Rocky is painting itself into, and that is a tough corner to be in because you are expected to keep that server up to date and running for 10 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough when you don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 months to say, yep, we will support this now and forever.
Right.
It's just a hard position to be put in.
As someone that would want an enterprise Linux in my environment, it's not the one I would choose. I would either go Alma if I wanted that, you know, set release cadence, or I would go CentOS Stream if I could manage to just deal with, streaming updates. I'm not going to say rolling because it's not rolling, but
they said it was rolling.
They kind of retracted that eventually.
But they said it.
So streaming. Stream is a good term. You keep those coming to me on a consistent mm-hmm. basis without necessarily the release cycle cadence. I guess I'd go with either of those. In the end, it's probably going to work fine. And if you ultimately came down to needing the support, you're going to pick RHEL.
Or you move to something else.
Yeah, you pitch it all and you go to Ubuntu or, you know, something like that, right?
So you might move to Ubuntu, but they have the same interest that IBM Red Hat have, which is the bottom line.
They do.
They will make moves the same way that IBM Red Hat is doing. The same, they will do the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In general, I'm not saying that they'll you know, release 2404 and say, hey, guess what? No, you can't just make flavors anymore.
Right.
You can't have downstream anymore because it's cut into our bottom line. So we want that whatever 10% revenue we were losing, we're going to claw that back.
Mind blown here now, right? I mean, think about that. Look at all the derivatives that are from the Ubuntu
Zorin
the Ubuntu
OS.
Base, and some of them, yes, some of them even
elementary
commercial
OS.
Instance type things.
Yes, Zorin and elementary come to mind that that are distributions that
OS?
That do not shy away from saying you should pay for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like Pop OS, they put it on the computer themselves,
yeah.
Right? I mean, like.
True that.
I mean, so that base is like the derivative for a lot of things that are commercial based.
Yeah.
So think if they pulled that back. I mean, what kind of outcry would be from that one? Holy cow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'd have a whole lot more distributions based on Debian, I'll tell you that.
And you could, like, ultimately you can, right? So, like, you could say, well, Ubuntu's just Debian testing with some different snapshotting to it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. You're probably right. But you put it together.
Right. I think if you have knowledgeable people on staff, I could totally see a Debian thing happening.
Well, you could. Yep. It's being done for different Debian derivatives too. I'm not saying it's not possible. It's just it's not equivalent to Ubuntu, right? And if the application
right.
that you're trying to deploy, whatever that is written in a way that needs that base with the packaging underneath, which is exactly why people go RHEL. If you need those things to be in a certain, you know, pattern.
Yep. I hope Rocky's doing it for you.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Alma does state that even though they won't be bug-for-bug compatible, they will be application compatible, so ABI compatible.
Right.
So, bless them. I think that's Yeoman's work in itself. So, that's good.
Well, I think if you're paying for Alma support and you have a problem, like, hey, this runs in RHEL, but it doesn't run in Alma, what's the deal? I mean, if you're paying them, they have a huge incentive to make it
and,
work.
And I think they will. I think they'll go, you know, I think they will as far as filing bugs and submitting patches and stuff to CentOS, which is what Red Hat really wants, is things get, you know, pushed into the development phase, and they want the clones, if you will, or the derivatives to be kind of forthcoming with some of the changes that need to be made into the enterprise Linux, you know, distribution that they're providing. And that's a lot of what happens. It does happen in the Ubuntu derivatives. You see things, you know, patches get pushed back to Ubuntu. Some of those things get pushed to Debian. I mean, and so ultimately it's a better ecosystem when everybody's contributing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, speaking of contribution, I think that was one of the biggest things that that the conversation around the web had brought up, right? That, you know, Red Hat may have made a different decision. Well, first off, they were very clear that this was not IBM. This was not IBM pulling the strings and saying that we, you know, whatever, maybe, I don't know. But there was this whole entire chain of conversation that went toward, well, if Alma and Rocky and Springdale and Oracle and yada, yada, yada had just contributed more, then maybe things wouldn't have gone this way. And I don't know. Mike McGrath, in his follow-up blog post to the, well, this is what we're doing with CentOS, said that there was no value in the clones.
Well, he later retracted that, but at least...
Well, it doesn't matter. Again... Where's your PR guy?
Yeah, I know.
Where is that person to tell you, man, that is not a cool thing to say.
Right.
Don't say that.
Yep, yep.
Because I agree with CTO Chris Wright, who said, CentOS Linux has truly helped to make RHEL and the supporting communities better.
Mm-hmm.
So we just forgot about that.
Yeah.
Back in 2020 when they made the first change from CentOS Linux to CentOS Stream. I don't like the look, I don't like the smell, and I don't like what has kind of transpired.
I agree with you.
What was so odd, and it doesn't normally happen this way, but what was so odd was that Red Hat employees were playing a whole lot of damage control from this move on the internet, mm-hmm. against the community.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel right. It didn't feel like, yeah, you know, Red Hat's a company making these moves, you know how they're going to do. It just didn't.
Here's my take on it. Had they announced that it was going to happen, not just this is happening now, if they had announced it's going to happen at some point in the future, and I don't know how much future you need to put to that, but I feel like it would have been better received. If they'd have said, you know, all right, so after, you know, REL 9, we're going to stop that. We can't be doing that anymore. It's just not working out for us.
They can't spend 7 more years giving stuff away for free. I mean, they had already given stuff away for free for more than 20 years, Dan. That's why CentOS existed. Now, if they continue giving stuff away for free, then they won't make 15% revenue jumps every single quarter. That's just unfeasible. And sure. So that's why it rubs me the wrong way.
It does have some of that. I get it. I also understand where they're coming from, too. I mean, they do have to weather the long-term storm just as much as the short one.
Well, 15% revenue quarter over quarter.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Feels like they're weathering pretty good.
It's fairly exponential. I understand.
In you know, 12 months or whatever, they're going to fire a bunch of other employees and then they'll need that money or something. I don't know. It does not feel
it,
right.
It doesn't. You're right.
I understand the stream thing. They announced it wrong. They did what you said, and they announced it mid-cycle and were like, hey, I know you've upgraded to CentOS 8 Linux and stuff, but... and so this feels very much the same.
No, it has that same feel.
Like they should have learned their lesson that time, but they didn't. And so, again, in mid-cycle, mid-everything,
right,
decided this is how we're going to do it. And
it's got a lot of sting.
Yeah, it did. It did, right? More than what I feel like a change like this should bring.
Red Hat themselves, like the employees that work for Red Hat, they are, like, extremely great about contributing to a lot of open source projects. Like,
oh, they do a lot of work.
They do. It benefits them. I understand that. But they're great about it. Like, I mean, even as far as contributing patches to other distributions because of things they've solved in, you know, the Red Hat thing, universe, if you will. So to say that they're not open source netizens, that's not fair because they really are. They're just not great citizens, maybe. I don't know how else to put it. Like, they're about dollars, and they're like, they're a corporate entity. So
it seems like you contribute to the things that will eventually benefit, contribute back to you, but people that don't pay you lots and lots of money will make some changes that affect you, and we won't give you a whole lot of runway to figure that out.
So it's unfortunate because they really are big contributors. There's other entities that are also big contributors. We talked about Endless, and they're really pushing the envelope as far as the things they contribute to. So, you know, maybe they get a little more support from folks, and that'd be great. I don't know. It's unfortunate, I guess, is the biggest thing.
Anyway, I'm running more Debian.
Well,
I think that is the my takeaway. It has shied me away. I'm not a Red Hat customer, man. I'm not paying.
We have a couple of machines at work that are, you know, we're going to have to figure something out because they're CentOS right now, and they've got to go somewhere. So I'm not sure. But there's only a couple of machines. Most everything.
CentOS Stream. It'll work. Otherwise, at the end of those blog posts, they do say to contact them, and they can help you work something out. I have a feeling that's more of a subscriber thing.
Probably for what we're running, it'd probably work just fine.
I bet it would. And I know there are a lot of folks that are like that. That will just use what works instead of sign up. But Red Hat has a lot of big companies that have signed on. So I don't think the people they've made mad are going to make any kind of difference.
Nope, I don't think so either.
In the bottom line. But I've been eyeballing Debian for a while, and I'm using a lot more Debian now. That the Proxmox thing that I mentioned last season that we'll come back and talk about a little bit, That constitutes one of the boxes, but the Ubuntu machines, and I had a couple of CentOS machines as well, personally.
Yep.
Those are now all Debian. Ooh. So, huh.
Interesting.
Huh.
Well, you know, interestingly, we are doing Debian right along with the Gentoo next episode.
We are.
Gonna have some Debian.
It's right there. It's like right there.
And that's been good too. That's been a good experiment as well. All right. As we mentioned, you can catch these and other great topics as they unfold on our Lemmy instance and our subreddit and our news channel on Discord. So in case you missed it, Lemmy, lemmy.linuxuserspace.show. Hey, interestingly, you can catch it at linuxuserspace.show/Lemmy as well.
Oh, however you want to type
it. You type it out and you'll get there. But we've got Reddit. And all these are linuxuserspace.show/whatever. So Reddit, Discord, we've got Mastodon, that's also on the Fediverse, Telegram, mm-hmm. Matrix, that's federated, but not on the ActivityPub, you know, protocol, but it is federated. Twitch, and, you know, so you can catch the live streams, we have Twitch, mm-hmm. and Twitter, mm-hmm. if you're still there on the bird site.
If it hasn't all burned down.
All right, Leo, it's time to watch your browser.
If you've been following along with the show for a while, you know that browsers are just operating systems on top of your operating system. So we have a bit of a... I have a bit of an infatuation with these things. I think I drag Dan kicking and screaming along with this sometimes.
Oh, yeah, twisted my arm really hard.
But, so if this is your first time tuning in, we like to talk about browsers. And because you got to use one. There's no way that you're just installing Linux, whatever form that your Gentoo, your Arch, your Ubuntu, your Debian, your Slackware, your whatever.
If it's a desktop, you're going to have a browser.
Right. You click on that button, probably one of the first buttons you click on, and is a browser. So you can go to linuxuserspace.show.
Absolutely. you know, one of the other derivatives of Linux User Space.
We actually have some feedback that we'll talk about here in a little bit that we might add one to the list of things to pay attention to. But we talk a lot about browsers, and this segment used to be called Mozilla Watch, but we decided to expand it to all the browsers because there's so much going on in that ecosystem that it's kind of hard not to talk about. But because it's used to be Mozilla Watch, we like to start out with Firefox.
Yeah, we're going
to
lead you off with Firefox. So... big news for the Linux folks, which that's why you're on the you're watching this show. Hardware video decoding is now enabled for Intel GPUs by default, and
that's me.
You know what? It's most of the people that, you know, that have a laptop. Just most everybody that has a laptop, and a lot of desktops too, but. Most everybody.
And if you have an NVIDIA card, you know, I'm sorry. But hey, you know, us Intel folks, we finally get here. Yeah. We have GPU decoding. GPU decoding. We can watch the videos without burning our battery out.
Yeah, yay! Using all the electrons and spitting out all the heat, hopefully. So at least from the CPU,
it renders nice.
It does render nice. And I've been using it for a little bit and good experience here. I don't know about you, Leo.
Mm.
Yeah.
So far, so good. I can't really say that the battery has not drained the same, but it hasn't gotten worse. That's for sure.
Yeah. And smooth video. That's the big thing.
It wasn't really like during the video. It was like as the video is starting to just... Mm-hmm.
Buffering or whatever. Yeah. Getting ready to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but as it got going, it was fine. But now I feel like
it's a little more instant.
It is. Yeah, it's you click on it, it goes, and it's nice.
It's small, but it's great. But in other Firefox news, the tab manager dropdown now features close buttons, so you can close your tabs a little more quickly, which is
okay.
Pretty darn slick.
I'm looking at it now. I actually didn't know what this
meant. You got to get a bunch of tabs, and then you got the list of tabs, and then you open that up, and then you got a whole bunch of little X's over to the right.
Yeah, well, you do Debian history. You try to go back, yeah. And then you have like 100 tabs open, and you're like, what even? I see it now. I actually, okay, so this makes a whole lot of sense.
It's very handy.
Because my first impression was, why are you closing tabs with the X button, having to like aim at it or right clicking on it and doing what?
Well, because
no,
like,
you just middle click the tab. I get it now.
Yeah.
I understand.
As you get a whole bunch of tabs, they get a little smaller. And then, you know, eventually you get the list. And then so you open up the list and you can just close them out. And, you know,
I tested it and I take everything I said back. Why didn't you just right click on the thing you wanted to close in that listing of tabs anyway? Or if you don't have a mouse, you triple tap or click, right? Like three finger does the middle
X
click.
X is nice. That's just all I'm going to say.
I agree, but I don't know why you wouldn't just middle click on it in the first place.
Maybe
not. I don't know. I'm surely I'm missing something. Please tell me why I'm wrong.
I think it's handy. I don't know. I'm not. Yeah, it's not bad.
It is handy. It is handy. But the middle click, there's a physical button.
I got that too, yeah.
For it. Like,
well, sometimes I have a problem with middle click sometimes. I accidentally scroll at the same time, and then you know, I don't know what's going to happen.
All right, I'm going to send you a better mouse, is what's going to happen.
Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just holding it wrong.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You need an Apple Magic Mouse. Oh, is
never.
You need to upgrade.
Anyway. Also, if you're migrating from another browser that is Chrome-based, you can bring over your payment methods, if you had those saved, into Firefox.
That's what I love doing on the internet.
Nope.
Spending money.
Well,
let's spend more money.
I do that. And sometimes I do that in an insomnia state on Prime Day, and you never know what's going to happen.
I did that on Prime Day. I'm ashamed. But I don't ever save my credit card information in websites or in the browser. I am too paranoid for
yeah,
that.
I don't either. But if you did,
I mean,
we gotcha.
Let me tell you why. Let me tell you why, because I know this has everything to do with browsers. Is because if I have something in my cart and I'm like, man, I should really get this. It is a detachment from that thought process to go get my wallet.
Open it up
to put
get it out.
The stuff in. It's a moment to reflect. And 9 times out of 10, I'm like, yeah, no, you're no, stop that. You don't need that. You don't need that. And then I'll come back and I'm like, yeah, I don't need that.
Yeah. And then, you know, next thing you know, I'm buying a friendly elect router.
We did that. And that's coming too. Don't worry. That's more content. It's coming.
Oh, boy. Additionally, they refreshed and streamlined the user interface for importing data in from other browsers, not just the payment stuff. They've also streamlined the whole process. So that's kind of cool. Bringing over your bookmarks, that's nice. That's a nice touch.
That's nice. That's good.
And finally, users without platform support for H.264 video decoding can now fall back to Cisco's Open H.264 plugin for playback.
Is that the one in Fedora that's always so choppy and terrible when if you don't install
the Cisco one? I don't know. I don't know about the performance of it, but at least you have something, and it can paint some pictures on your screen.
That's true. I appreciate the pictures, but it should be smooth. So yeah, RPM Fusion.
But yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So Dan, this is all you. I know you are a Vivaldi fan.
You enjoy
the Chromium ecosystem?
I don't know about that so much. Vivaldi, I feel like, is a little bit separated from the regular Chromium ecosystem.
Okay. It's just all of Chromium and also Vivaldi, but I got
you. Yeah, okay. So Vivaldi's cool. So Vivaldi 6.1 in June, they finally found a way to use the Bing chat, you know, the Microsoft AI chatbot akin to ChatGPT, and Google Bard, and so they got that incorporated. And workspaces work better by allowing you to copy all the links in a tab stack, which I think that's cool.
That's actually my favorite feature. I stuck the chatty thing in there because I just love. So speaking of Red Hat,
yeah,
I just love like the workarounds. I really enjoy just, you can't do this, right? So the Bing chat thing was just only available in Microsoft Edge. Yep. And you had to be on Microsoft Edge to be able to use Bing chat. And Vivaldi was like,
yeah, we got you.
Nuh-uh. Yeah, exactly. And so I love that kind of thing. So there's a part of me that is like, go, Rocky, go. You just keep pulling that UBI image and just,
as long as it's there, go for it.
Getting those SRPMs. You keep doing it. That is my favorite thing about this. Not necessarily that Bing chat is, you're able to use Bing chat. That's fine. I mean, you can ask it questions and it can be wrong all the time, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, you could get some really strange results sometimes. Sometimes it's not so bad, but other times
it just makes it up, and that's fine. That's fine too.
Well, I mean, a lot of us do that, so what's the difference?
Well, I mean, yeah, if you're handing in a paper, don't. But I mean, you know, otherwise, if you're just BSing your boss, he doesn't know any better. Yeah, it happens.
There's tools to detect that stuff, so be careful.
Yeah, they're terrible. I mean, what, the U.S. Constitution is also apparently AI derived. So, unless you have a teacher or some kind of professor that is just really hard up on using those tools, you're going to be fine. You'll be fine. But my favorite thing about the Vivaldi stuff was that
the tab stack stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So for those that don't know, that don't use Vivaldi tab stacks, this is a way to, like, you can have a bunch of tabs in a nice, neat little stack that you can add to or remove from. And sometimes, because you crazy folks have 100 tabs open at a time, and so you have to be able to sort them. That's what this is about, right? And so in a tab stack, you can right-click on that, and you can copy all the links in the tab stack, and then, like, scoot that over somewhere else. Give that to someone. Like, hey, I was doing Debian history the other day, and I had 74 tabs open, and I wanted all of the links. And so here you go. And, you know, they'll not look through all those links. But you know
that
what?
That might be a lot.
It's not for them. It's for you. It's about note-taking, okay? That's what it's about. And it's about searchability.
I will say I do use Vivaldi for the show for that purpose. When you get a whole bunch of things that are like-minded and you want to group them together, you can put them in a stack. And then so when you're doing your research, it really does help organize things pretty good. And especially when you go to put all that stuff into the show notes. I'll set up some stacks, and so that I can make sure the links work correctly and whatnot, so we can get them out there to, you know, all the viewers. So it adds a lot of functionality for me for the show. So yeah, stacking tabs is pretty great. Tiling tabs is also the other thing that I use a lot, so that I can go from one to the other and compare things too sometimes. So yeah, both of those.
So a diff for a browser.
It is, yeah.
Interesting. So, Dan, remind me why we can't have all of these cool features in one browser?
Well, if we could get them in Firefox, it'd be great.
That would be great.
I think there are extensions to do some of those things, but they're not always implemented super great from what I hear.
Oh, you just wait till we get to the Opera section because, yeah, I agree.
Okay.
So, Microsoft Edge. Microsoft Edge. Blocks notification spam now. So when you go to a website and it's like, hey, man, do you want us to tell you about everything that we do on this website? And we want it to actually be in your notification bar. And hey, guess what? You have a virus. All of that is they finally are blocking. Just get uBlock Origin. But
I was going to say, I don't think I've ever noticed this because I use uBlock Origin.
Yeah, because we surf the web safely.
Well, there's
with
that.
uBlock Origin, yeah. And I think it should just be like required reading to be intelligent.
Yeah, it's like
this is required installation to be safe on the internet.
It's one of the first things I install on every browser.
Right, but most folks don't add add-ons, and so
I don't have a lot. That's one of them.
Right, and so you know. Props to Edge. I'm not a huge fan of Edge. I am not. But you know what? Credit where credit's due. They're helping the majority of folks that aren't nerdy enough to even know that add-ons exist. So, you know,
yeah,
cool. I appreciate that. I really do. But if you're on Linux running Microsoft Edge, I have a feeling you know that add-ons exist. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah, probably.
If you don't, they're doing it for you, and I appreciate that. So Opera, Vivaldi's bigger brother, right? Because back in the day, Opera was just one, and then like Opera split off into GX, and then like Vivaldi did its thing. And now, back in June, Opera rebranded, redid,
yep.
And they are now Opera One. Whoa. So they did a whole redesign, they added a whole lot of features, and the three that I think differentiate Opera from the rest, there is what they call a tab island, not the dynamic island. I know everybody in here just loves Apple stuff, and they're just like, ooh, I wish I could have the dynamic island. Not that. It's not that. It is tab island. And what this is think about Firefox multi-account container, right? Like where it categorizes all of the tabs in a category, and it colorizes it. Mm-hmm. So you know what tabs are related by what color they are. And it allows you to easily manage them or move them around. Or if you're like, you know what, that's the work tab island and it's 501.
Yeah.
You know what? Collapse all that.
I'm done with that.
I don't want to close it. It's nice. You collapse it all. It goes over off into a little side. And then you can uncollapse it later on, right? Presumably 8:01 a.m. the next day or something, right?
Sounds interesting.
It is. It is actually really cool. It's hard to explain. You should go look at it. But basically, it's multi-account containers with Flare. Mm-hmm. And the Flare, I mean, is that you can move them around at the same
right.
time. I want multi-account containers to get these features. Mm-hmm. This is something that I think Opera is doing that no one else is doing. I know Vivaldi is doing some tab cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like the way Opera is doing it. They're taking, like, they're doing what Vivaldi is doing, but like inserting it in using multi-account containers.
Right.
It is such a weird mishmash of the two ideas, and I like that more than either of the two by themselves. It's fantastic. The one thing the Tab Island doesn't do, though, is actually containerize those tabs. Mm. It's a new browser session, but it doesn't actually contain them. So it doesn't give you that like cookie containerization that Firefox does.
Yeah.
So if you've already been logged in, you're still logged in, but it does give you the ease of use of moving them around, closing them all at the same time or whatever. So it is new. It's awesome. I like it. Add the containerization part to it. And, oh boy, if I can't have that in Firefox soon,
yeah.
I'm going to be upset. Yeah. That is something I'm looking forward to.
I guess everybody's going to have their thing to set themselves apart. And this might be just it.
And they also have a sidebar, kind of like Vivaldi does. And so Vivaldi has this sidebar where you can have like mail, and then you can log into Vivaldi.social or some other federated Mastodon, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a note taker and all this other stuff. So Opera has that too. They're more about the web apps.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where you can add Spotify. So you have a little sidebar Spotify where you can change your music, do whatever you want to do, or link it up to WhatsApp so you can, you know, have your chat instead of having the WhatsApp app. That's hard to say.
Yeah.
You just have it built into the browser itself, which is really kind of cool.
It is kind of cool.
And no browser would be complete in 2023 without an AI assistant, because that's just where everybody's at right now. You got Google with the Bard, you got Edge with the Bing, and Vivaldi with the Bing, because they had to be on that train. And now you got Opera with the Aria. You need an AI assistant. Dan, we are not complete. It turns out we are all 90% human. The other 10% is an AI chatbot in your browser. That's what we needed. We didn't know we needed it, but now we're complete.
Well, I mean, we've got a couple of bots that we hang out with. We got Craig and Jerk.
But these guys don't tell us what to do or give us any information.
No, they're just good listeners.
That's what we need. Dan, that is the next breakthrough. You have nailed it. An AI chatbot that doesn't respond. It just
listens.
That's it. Man.
Soothing for the soul.
We're going to be trillionaires. Just wait.
Hey, you can get all the links at our website, linuxuserspace.show. And if you want to send us some feedback, which is like the next segment, you can send it to contact@linuxuserspace.show.
I dare you.
Or, hey, on Lemmy. We'll take it on Lemmy, too.
Anywhere you want to talk trash, I'm here for it.
Yeah. We love when you talk trash to us.
Or you can be nice. You can be like, oh, I like the show, man. You know, pretty much like the next three people did.
Yeah, absolutely. So, first up, Sebastian sends us a message. Says, since you guys like browsers so much, hey, we just talked about them for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Then maybe consider looking into Serenity OS browser called Ladybird. Unlike the Chrome clones, this is from a from scratch project. People working on Serenity OS make everything themselves, including the browser engine, and including their own JavaScript engine. Now, this has got me intrigued. I'm going to check it out now. So every month, Andreas Kling, there's a link to his YouTube, makes videos about the progress on the system. Ordinary people would think there's nothing interesting, but the sole fact that they do such progress and that they do everything from scratch is just so interesting that it makes every update video very exciting. I can be on board with that. I watched some of that type of thing. It says the browser works both inside the Serenity OS and on Linux, and one can compile Ladybird on Linux that will use Qt6 for GUI, but for every logic inside is still from Serenity OS project. And he says, love the show. So, yeah, thanks.
This makes me think that Serenity OS is not a Linux.
That's also on the research schedule here now. But I have somebody else pointed this out, I feel like, somewhere, and I just I didn't really get a chance to go look at it. But the fact that they build it all, the whole thing from scratch, that's kind of amazing.
Okay, get this. Serenity OS, a graphical Unix-like operating system for desktop computers. Serenity OS is a love letter to 90s user interfaces with a custom Unix-like core. It flatters with sincerity by stealing beautiful ideas from various other systems. So the goal is a marriage between the aesthetic of late 90s productivity software and the power user accessibility of the late 2000s. A system by us, for us, based on things we like. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
what?
I'm going to check it out now. So that, thanks.
Holy, it looks like Windows 95.
Nothing wrong with that.
This is amazing. I'm here for it. How do I? Okay. Nope. You may or may not see this on the show. This is cool. I'm here for it. Okay. All right. I like it. And so they have their own browser. I want to try it now. I don't know what it's about. I don't know how fast it is. Can it do YouTube? Oh, wait. Dan, your test, our test, the Netflix test.
Netflix. That's the one.
Which, you know, I feel like the Netflix test is an easy test to pass. Maybe we should make it the Disney test.
Yeah,
from now on.
Yeah, Disney Plus. That's a harder one to hit. Yeah. Actually, maybe even harder yet is like Peacock.
Oh, true. Do you have all these?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, no, that's totally cool. I'm glad you do, because I feel like we need to compile this guy on, because he said the word compile. We're going to do it on Gentoo, maybe, possibly. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, if I ever get done with my operating system.
Don't hold me to the dumb things I say, but
I think it's too late for that.
Well, you know what? You're already compiling Qt6 and stuff over there on Plasma. Okay, maybe not 6, but you know, you're compiling Qt over on Plasma Land. So, yep. Sounds like Dan's gonna do this for you, Sebastian.
I'll give it a whirl. I'll give it a whirl somewhere. Oh, hey. I'll try it. I'll try anything.
All right. Don't hold me to the dumb things I say, but do hold Dan to the dumb things he says.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious now. This is cool. I do want to run it. This is really cool. I have no idea what it can do, but I'm curious. Will Ladybird pass the Peacock test or the Disney test or the Netflix test or the YouTube test? We'll run them down that way and figure out what it can do. But either way, exciting, fun. I kind of want to add it to Browser Watch. Next up, Rich. I just found your podcast last week and have started to listen from episode 1, and I'm really enjoying it. Wow, you have a long way to go. I've been doing consulting for many years and then moved on into security and then into forensics, and I love it. I've always wanted to get into Linux, but would load and then bail a few days later. Don't worry, we all did that. Recently, I started to build from scratch, Greenbone 22.4. After about 1 month and loading Ubuntu, Fedora, Kali, and finally settling with Debian, ding, 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 I got the program up and running. Through all this, I started to really enjoy running Linux and starting to consider converting my laptop to Linux, but want to feel more comfortable before doing so. When I was building Greenbone from scratch, I was exposed to Make and CMake along with curl. I'm very much a noob. My question is, do you have a suggestion or a book or resources I can go to learn Linux and feel more comfortable so I can change and start using Linux completely? Okay, I got a couple of issues, Rich. If you're talking about Make and CMake, you are no longer a noob.
Yeah, you've graduated.
You have graduated to amateur.
Yeah, probably because, at least, yeah.
Because now you're going to unsuccessfully compile so many things.
Well, there's that. Or you can figure out that there's a lot of distributions out there that actually have things already compiled as a binary, and you can just download them.
Well, and this is a huge claim to fame for Kali. Kali does this. Kali compiles the Greenbone security assessment system.
They do.
I think that's what it, whatever. The Greenbone scanner, and they do it all. But he did list it.
Yep.
And so I think he may have tried it and decided that he doesn't want all the Kali fluff.
Yeah, so fluff. That's it. That might be it right there, that you don't need things, or you do need things. And that's why you end up compiling something to, you know, that's why people go Gentoo, so they can have it the way they want it, right?
Exactly.
But, I mean, you know, probably for most of the applications that you're going to use, you don't really need to do that necessarily.
Well, you don't have to. You don't have to, but it sounds like he wants to, and if you do, I want him to want to, and that is really cool.
There's a couple happy mediums there, if I was going to pick a distribution. But yeah, to learn it all, it really does depend on which path you want to go, I feel like, right?
You know what, though? To really learn it, to actually learn Debian.
Uh-huh.
For real. That is my choice, because I learned it all as a hodgepodge in different distributions, you know, Red Hat for a while, SUSE for a while. I did SUSE like professionally for a while, Ubuntu for a little while. The one thing that I learned was that Debian it's all of Linux, but not put together for you in the nice, neat, super packaged kind of way. Like, don't get me wrong, you can install all kinds of packages, but they tend to not be configured, right? Like when you install Debian,
yeah,
sudo's not there. So you need to configure sudo, you need to add yourself, or install sudo, you need to add yourself to the group and make it all kind of work together. And I guess maybe I'm just installing the server one or something, I don't know. What.
Yeah, because it is in the desktop now, so you only get that if you don't add a user. If you just have the root user, at the time of install, you're right. You have to.
I want to say I did that with Debian 12 because I have a couple. The one that I installed, and I have Docker and I have a bunch of containers running. Maybe I did it. I got the one that's on their download page.
Right, like, right, yeah. If you install and you don't add a user at the time of install, you're right. Sudo is not there.
I want to say
and it's
I
not
did.
Set up.
But I want to.
If you did,
you know what?
There is a little tick box though. if you don't tick the little box that says, you know, make this person an administrator or whatever the equivalent of that is, then they don't get added to the pseudo group.
And I think that is a Rocky Rel Fedora thing. I don't remember that button on the Debian 12 installer. I do not remember it. Maybe I just don't remember it.
So which installer did you use? Because there's a couple different options there too.
The graphical one.
There's Calamari's one. Or the regular Debian installer.
Not that one.
There's no shortage of installers for Debian. I'm just
not the
say.
Calamari's one for sure. It was not pretty.
All right. Okay. I don't know why I did. I used Calamari's.
Okay. See that. But that's what I like about it, right? Like Debian has all the things.
There's a lot of options.
It has like all the things.
Well, here's the other thing. If you get a package that you want reconfigured, you can do that on Debian. You can download the source and you can do a reconfigure all through, you know, dpackage and do all of that. Just almost like you were installing, you know, and compiling from source. But it handles all that stuff for you, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. You can get into the nitty gritty with Debian. That was my point. And
it's not wrong.
So I want to cut to Rich's question.
Yeah, where do you learn?
I sent an email back, but I want to share that with everybody. If you feel like you really want to learn Linux and not the fluffy stuff, not the gooey stuff, you actually want to get into the guts of Linux, the Linux Command Line by William E. Schatz will give you a huge understanding. Start with that book, and it will show you the ropes. It's really good. So do you have a recommendation, Dan?
I was going to go a different route. Like, we've pitched this before. I really think Jay LaCroix's Learn Linux stuff is really good because he does some of those basic command line things and he walks you through. He doesn't probably get as many of the commands that are in a book like you're talking about, but he gets more in depth, I feel like, than you could probably get on each thing. And so he hits all of the simple basic things that you definitely need to build your foundation. So that's kind of my vote on that.
Well, I'll give you a third option, Rich.
Okay.
If there's a command, something basic that you don't understand or you would just like to hear about, throw it our way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know, maybe there's room for a section where we talk about command line stuff like that. Maybe there is. I don't know.
Yeah, we could totally focus on it for a segment.
Oh, that's a whole season of app focus right there. Yeah, I'm glad you're getting into Linux. I don't know what I would recommend for a laptop. I would probably just say Ubuntu or an Ubuntu derivative like Mint or Xorin or Pop OS, maybe.
I don't know. Debian's
like
running
that
pretty well for me right now too. I don't know. Like if you're there, that's not bad.
Debian's right there. It is really good. You do have to do a little more tinkering on a Debian box to get it, you know, nice and user-friendly, as opposed to a Ubuntu or Ubuntu derivative. So, you know, but if you're trying to learn Linux, it's probably not a bad place to start.
It's not. All right, next up is from Scout. It says, hey guys, I've been following your show since 314, season 3, episode 14. Thanks. Found and followed both of you on Mastodon.
Yay!
I am a partially blind new user to Linux. I currently use Pop OS, and I plan to try Fedora in a couple of weeks, or in a couple of flavors soon, as well as Endless. Are there any current distros that are more accessible than others? I'd have to reach out to the community on this one, but it says, I know Sonar is no longer viable. I am running an old HP 110 desktop machine. The only modification I have made is to upgrade the memory to 16 gig as opposed to the original 4. Well, that's a good move. Says, I heard you mention a few episodes someone making a very small micro PC. Who was that and what was it called? I don't know. We've talked about a lot of them.
Yeah, we might have been talking about like the ThinkPad or ThinkPad, ThinkCenter minis or the HP minis. I think around episode 314-ish, 316-ish.
Probably. That's,
we were talking about those. I know I had brought it up because of a Proxmox build that I was planning on.
And that's what I have for my Proxmox build is a couple of the HP minis. Specifically, these are G2s, but I know they've got G3s and G4s out that are also very small.
Yep, mine is a ThinkCenter M715Q. There we go.
The 715 is the AMD version.
You're right.
The 710 would be an Intel version. Yeah.
Yeah, and as you will hear, going AMD is what prevented me from sticking with VMware. I'll get into that a little more when we actually talk about that. But anyway, if those are the mini PCs you're talking about, then those are good ones to check out. They're really nice. They're very fast. You can get them newer.
Yep.
But we also talked a little bit about like the ARM boards and stuff.
We did. I don't know as I'd recommend that necessarily for a desktop if that's what you're looking for.
Right.
So, yeah, I think the little HP minis, the IBM minis, those are good ways to go. There's a couple of different ones, a couple of different generations, even the slightly used ones with like probably an 8th gen or newer, you know, CPU would be good. And 16 gig is probably fine for your RAM if you're not doing anything too extensive. So,
yeah
great little machines. And they have small expansions that you could do. Like, so you can add storage, you can add RAM, little things like that. A little more accessible as far as working on them than a laptop would be, but not totally inaccessible like something like a MacBook or something like that that you can't even get into. And then as far as like your other question about accessibility on, you know, functions on the distros, that kind of varies widely too, I feel like. And some do better job than others. Some come with like Orca to do screen reading. Some of them, like, there used to be a distro that is gone now that was focused solely on accessibility and whatnot, and it like did all of that stuff from the live installation, which it's unfortunate that that's gone now. But I don't know. Like, I feel like as far as desktop environments, I know some attention is made to Mate as far as accessibility, specifically Ubuntu Mate, because I think Martin has a keen interest in making that happen. So that might be something to check out. That may be more accessible than others.
Yeah, I would say stick with the major distributions like Ubuntu, Fedora, stick with the big desktops like GNOME and Plasma. I think you'll have a better response from those. But yeah, I think as Dan was kind of alluding to, this might be a question better suited for the community. So if you know of a more accessible distribution, let us know and we'll talk about it a little bit. We'll pass that information on to Scout.
Yeah, happy to promote those things because I think they need more attention. So, up next in the show is a couple of focus sessions. Hopefully we can get through them because the show is really, well, we're catching up.
We'll be fast.
So first up is the community focus. We want to draw your attention to a somewhat new podcast, the Linux
that Dan probably won't kill.
I don't think so. It seems pretty solid. I'm not making any guarantees, though. I'm really not. I'm not doing great. I'm not. I'm sorry for everybody that I promote in a way.
for those that haven't been following the show, Dan kills shows. Like, we talk about them in this segment. And then, like, they go on to die in a couple of months?
You know, here's another way to look at that. Maybe we just outlive them.
You know what? I prefer that take. That is a good way to look at it.
So, okay, we've outlasted a couple of things. I don't know if we'll outlast this one or not, I don't think so. So this is the Linux Matters podcast, which it's only 7 episodes in. So, I mean, we're going to get it right out of the gate. But I'll say
coming
it's
in with the boost.
Coming. No,
no, not that. No. Oh, that's a different one. OK,
but it's I think it feels pretty fantastic. Some people might call this a continuation of the old Ubuntu podcast, but I feel like it's an expansion beyond that. So it features Popey, Mark, and Wimpy that used to be on the Ubuntu podcast, but now we're here on Linux Matters podcast. And I think it's good because it lifts the restriction of having to focus on Ubuntu things, and now they can just focus on Linux and open source things.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't like this show, and I'm going to tell you why. Because it feels like the same show. The banter feels familiar. The voices feel familiar. But you know what's not there? That old-timey music. And that is just something I cannot abide. That is required for this group of folks. I need the old-timey Ubuntu podcast music. Otherwise, it's not the same. It's not the same.
Well, you heard it here, the hot take here first, folks. At all of your comments to Leo. No, it really is great. It is. I specifically enjoyed listening to Mark's, high-tech washing machine that he came up with the high-tech solution to, time his washes so that he can maximize his energy savings in the off hours, off peak, time to get better pricing on electricity.
I do the same thing, and it's not smart. My washer, like, it just lets you say start in 4 hours.
Really?
And that's just been my solution to doing things at certain times. I'm not as cool as Mark though, so I mean I get it. But
yeah, Mark's got a washing machine that's high tech. And he'll talk about it, and you can listen to it. It's pretty great. I liked it. I liked his solution because it's something I would do.
yeah, I should.
So I don't even pay attention to the electricity consumption around here because everything consumes power.
Yeah. I run too many computers to concern myself with something like that.
Exactly. So it's a great show. Go check it out. LinuxMatters.sh, the Linux Matters podcast. And they're on the YouTube and all the regular podcast places.
All right, one more time. We're going to focus. This time. Okay, so we were talking about Lemmy. We probably hawked it like 4 times. We definitely talked about it for a while. I really enjoy my time over there, but getting to Lemmy on the phone is a bit of a chore if all you have is a browser. So instead of using a browser, I don't know, random nerds like me and Dan tend to use apps on a phone.
Yes.
So Dan, I know you're on Android. I myself am on iOS.
Yep.
So we can't have the same apps a lot of times. I guess if it's Twitter, we can. But if it's something like a Lemmy client,
yep.
Those aren't always necessarily the same.
Yeah.
So what is it that you use to log into lemmy.linuxuserspace.show?
So I use Jerboa. And no, this isn't the little desert guy that hops around. This is the native Lemmy app for Android.
Okay. Ubuntu had one of these. It wasn't a Jerboa.
Jerboa is like a little mouse size, maybe a little
baby
bigger
kangaroo looking thing.
Yeah, but he looks like a kangaroo. Yeah, he hops around. It's a desert creature or grasslands too, I guess. Anyway, kind of cool looking dude. Anyway, that's what I use for my app. It's nice. It's got a good look and feel. I've been using it for quite a little bit to interact with our Lemmy instance. It has some interesting theme options, obviously light and dark, but it has some accent color options too. So, you know, above and beyond your regular system theme, you can give it a little coloring as well, which is nice. It's got a good layout, so you can see the feed, and obviously you got your sort options at the top, so you can see the hot items, or, you know, you can see everything, so you get the full fire hose feed in your face, or just the local or subscribe stuff too.
Yeah.
So that's pretty nifty. I've had no issues making posts either because I've been using it quite a bit for posting things. And I know you've seen some of those go through the news thing. It's got a good flow for doing it, much like the web, but it's got a good flow so you can select the right, you know, community to post things to. And
does your app show you so like there's Linux at lemmy.ml.
Yeah.
And there's Linux at lemmy.world. Does it show you the difference?
Yes.
The web does not, and that is upsetting. You just have to know in which order you subscribed. You can go to the communities and see the order, but it just says Linux twice, and that's hard.
If you use the short code, but if you start searching, you can see the big long name that I gave it, and
okay.
And then you're kind of all set.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the way I usually do it. But it's a more of a drop down option in the application,
right?
Rather than type it in. So
When
you're dropping it down like that, you can easily pick it. So like I said, it's got a good flow. You don't have to type stuff out because nobody wants to type on their phone. It's absolutely terrible. Yeah. you want to be able to pick and select things. So for me, it works well.
Right.
You know, as you could guess with the increased popularity, there's been a lot of updates to these things. So you really want to try to stay on top of getting it updated. You can download Jerboa right from the GitHub. Like they post the APKs right there.
What an Android thing to say.
I know, it's kind of cool. But you know, not everything does that, right? They don't necessarily publish them separate from the stores. But obviously it is in the stores. You can get it in both Google Play Store and F-Droid, which are the two most popular that I know of. There's probably some other stores that it's posted into, but that's where I've found it. And I use the one from F-Droid because that's just kind of easier for me.
And it's updating and everything. Yeah.
So.
And so I'm the same way. I appreciate just having a quick app that I can, you know, do comments on. That is my thing. I will post from the web. I will on a desktop because I have my newsfeed and everything else. It's all right there.
I typically do too, but sometimes I don't. Yeah,
I'll throw it into Discord, throw it into Reddit, throw it into Lemmy, and just kind of do that whole situation on the desktop. It feels a little easier to do. But when it comes to someone commenting under one of the posts or commenting directly to me or something like that, it feels a whole lot more native to just do that on a phone. So my choice for that is actually the first, as far as I could tell, the very first Lemmy app to hit the App Store and get through the beta process and blah, blah, blah,
right,
and actually get posted. Memmy. So that is Lemmy, L-E-M-M-Y, but with an M instead of an L. So it's three M's, M-E-M-M-Y. And pretty much the same thing as Dan was talking about. So if you're familiar with kind of the Apollo workflow on iOS, if you were using that, Memmy feels a whole lot like that.
Yeah.
So it is not a huge departure from, and I was a big Apollo user, so it was a very familiar workflow for me. So I like it. I like it a whole lot. I mean, it's got the light and the dark themes, and it is easy to swap between like controversial and hot and new. The different kinds of posts that you can see, you can move from your local subscriptions to your wider server subscriptions to like all the things. So it's all possible within the app. There's a whole lot of things that are getting added all the time. I swear there were a couple of times where I was like, oh man, I wish Memmy could do this. And then like I closed it and then opened it up a few hours later and realized it was an update. And sure enough,
there it is.
Now it can do that.
Yeah, a lot of updates.
Yeah, that I think that's one thing that, you know, if we say something, it doesn't do something on this show that will be wrong in the next 24 hours.
Yeah, it might be.
So I'm not being very specific about what it can and can't do, because by the time you hear it, there's a good chance it can probably already do that. I absolutely have enjoyed Memmi for Lemmi. And yeah, man, I really do recommend it. So if you're on iOS, if you're trying to join one of the Lemmi instances or whatever, you're trying to get access to one of our communities or whatever, I think Memmi is a really, really good way to do it.
Yep.
So, Jerboa, Memmi, whatever side of the fence you're on, get one. Yep. Join us on Lemmi.
Absolutely.
Have a good time. There's a whole lot of stuff going on over there, and it seems a whole lot of activity too. So, yeah, it's a good time.
Yep. All right, Leo, that brings us to the bottom of the show here, where we talk about next time.
And I thought it was going to be a quick one.
He was worried. He was like, what else can we put in there? And I'm like, I think we got enough, buddy.
We should stop.
But anyway, next time, we're going to talk about the history of Debian. And woo! That's going to be a lot, because Debian's got a long history. Just saw Slackware had 30 years.
30 years.
So, I mean, Debian's pretty close. Pretty close. So
I think by the time the Debian episode drops, if I remember the timeline right, it'll probably like be about months. Debian birthday time. Yeah,
I was going to say, they're like months apart. Like, it's not far, right? It's really close. So 30 years, that's a dang long time.
We didn't time that. Yeah, we didn't time that. Not on purpose anyway.
We didn't, but it's cool.
So that'll work out.
Debian is the one we're going to talk about, and that's going to fill an episode, I'm sure. In between shows, you can catch us on Lemmi, Twitter, Mastodon, Telegram, Matrix, Discord, whatever. You know, we're out there. We're out there, and you can give us suggestions. I'd love it if you did that. I'd love to know what we can improve on, what topics you want to hear about. Send those to us, and we'll try to jam them in the show. All the links in the show notes and on linuxuserspace.show. So, Leo, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me always on the old Twitter, at Leo Chavez, or on mastodon.social. You can find me at Leo Chavez over there as well.
All right, and I'm still on the bird site too, at KC2BZ, and I'm at KC2BZ at mastodon.social. You can find me there as well. So join us again in a couple of weeks when we return to the Linux user space.
See you later.
Bye now. So it does have a fingerprint reader, and I did install the stuff for the fingerprint reader.
Fprintd, he says.
And it worked, except I feel like the fingerprint reader on this is not terribly accurate.
Uh-oh. What do you do? Like, you could do your finger or your face?
Well, sometimes it read my finger and sometimes it didn't. So I gave up on the fingerprint.
Oh. Okay. Well, just the old password.
I have no blame for Debian or fprintd. I feel like it's the...
I blame fprintd.
Nah, I feel like it's the fingerprint reader itself.
Yeah, okay, you're probably right.
Because fprintd worked well, and it was super handy to just tap that on, you know, when I got to SDDM and it was asking me to log in, I just hit that and it logged me in. And like if I wanted to SSH into something or, you know, sudo or whatever, I just hit that and like it was there. And it worked good when it read it. When it didn't read it, it was like, nope, try again. Nope. Try again.
Yeah.
Nope. Try again.